Hello and welcome to Conversations with the Voice of Reason. I'm your host, Benjamin Boyce, and today's conversant is returning guest Xi Van Fleet, who is a Chinese immigrant to America and the author of Mao's America, which details her experience in communist China and how the American elite are following in the same footsteps as the elite in China over the past 100 years or so. In this conversation, we talk about those similarities and how it is Americans' responsibility to keep America free. And how do we do that? But by exercising our natural rights of freedom of association, freedom of thought, and freedom of speech. Xi is a wonderful firecracker of a woman. Definitely check out her work, links to which are down there in the description. Without further ado, here is Xi Van Fleet.
I'm sorry I missed you yesterday. We ended up way
out of range. No problem. Absolutely. Now I know that you're on vacation. At first, I thought you lived there. I said, well, okay. For some reason, I don't know anyone. I have nobody interviewed me from Hawaii. So.
Well, you're only the second person I've interviewed in Hawaii. So there we go. We're both new at this.
You're not a Hawaiian.
No. There's actually that structure behind me is that's where the rainwater is collected. And then it goes through a filter, a couple of filters and stuff. So all the water's on site. And
that's huge.
Yeah, it's big. So you wanted to go deeper. You want this
or fresh, as you said, fresh. You know, rather than where tell me about what happened to when you were there. I can't tell the whole thing because there's no point. So it ended up that I was in school. I witnessed 1, 2, 3, and then I went to conference. I don't know, but it's all good. But with you, I'd rather do something different than last time.
Well, I have a couple of questions just came to me, and I think that they would be broad enough for you to go wherever you want with them. And it might help to also understand the meaning or the significance or the intention of your book, Mao's America. And it's two questions, and maybe there's three questions, but what does it mean to be an American? And what does it mean to be Chinese? And what does it mean to be communist? Those are three different identities.
But I hope this is not a monologue. You can kind of help me out because that's a huge question. Those are huge questions, and I haven't really give that much thought, but I can talk about it definitely.
So which is more important to you? Being Chinese, being not communist anymore, or being an American? Like, is there an order to that?
That I'd rather talk about or I believe in?
When you think of yourself, what you are, if you do that?
I think of myself as a free person, free man, free woman, and that is being American.
Okay. Yeah. And so how did you come to that?
There is a process. Yeah, that is called assimilation. And which that the left want to get rid of it. And so becoming America is really my journey. And that why I talk about that in my first and third chapter. And especially the third chapter, not in detail because it's not about me. This is about the parallels. But I talk about the journey of becoming America.
And what is that for you? What has that been?
What is that is a really to have to understand what the freedom means to me and how we have freedom here. And that's first question, what the freedom to a person, because a lot of people come here, they have no idea about they don't ask the question, what the freedom is. I have a conversation with one of my best friends about this freedom. And we have the similar experience. She's Chinese, I'm Chinese, we came here, whatever. So when one day we talk about the lack of freedom and lack of freedom in America, in China, she said, I said, we can't speak the truth, we can't talk. And she said, I never had the desire, I have nothing to say. So she was fine of not having that freedom. So there's a lot of people like that. And it's not like a, there's a lot of people, especially unassimilated immigrants. Mm-hmm. A lot of Americans don't know what the freedom is. They don't know until they lose it.
Okay.
And which we're in the process of losing it.
Yeah. So was that a shock to you to find that you could be free when you discovered the concept?
No, it's not. It's not an event. It's a process.
Okay.
It's a process. Okay. We're having a great conversation right now, but hopefully we'll get to it. Because to be free, you have to be able to think. And when you come from a system that you did not know, you could not think. And that's what happened to me. And some people just get used to it. You just don't think. You just you take whatever given to you. In China, it's the media and it's the education system controlled by CCP. And here it's controlled by the regime. And people don't, same thing, people don't think about it. They just, and to be able to be an independent thinker, that's real freedom is, I think. And to be able to believe in it and practice it rather than just think, and then the fear of saying it aloud and also pursue it. And it is also the problem nowadays. A lot of people, they can still think independently, but they dare not to challenge the lies that they were told.
So it's not enough to just have the option to have free thought. You have to exercise it in order
to prove
that it's still there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And resist the lie. Not just resist. You have to have the courage to challenge it. And that's how we could keep our freedom. If we all think independently, we all dare not to challenge the lies, and then we follow and we obey the authoritarianism, and then it doesn't matter. You have to come here first, and you have to exercise. I love the word. I always lack of the best word when I need it.
Well, it's your second language, so I'm sure you know the Chinese word that you'd be looking for.
I loosen the Chinese and not getting the English. That's the problem.
Best of both, worst of both worlds. So just, I think it's important for us as Americans, natural born Americans, to really understand the value of something like freedom and how necessary it is, because you do see, you pursue your career. I'm just going to make up an example. You pursue your career as a educator and mm-hmm. or as a psychologist. Actually, more and more professional jobs are routed through variations of HR, where there is ideological training and compliance mm-hmm. yeah. that you have to do with regard to diversity, okay. equity, and inclusion, because, and on the veneer of that is a sense of wanting to be equal, mm-hmm. wanting to provide everybody with the equal opportunity, and wanting to be fair. Fairness is another value. Freedom doesn't mm-hmm. exist in the vacuum. It exists in yeah. balance with these other yeah. values. And so the professional, different systems, if you want to become a psychologist, you have to go through the training, and the training is becoming more and more ideological, more and more moral. And as you fit yourself into that box of being a psychologist, you have to go through these different loops, and you have to speak the certain words, whether you disagree with them or not, or agree with them, mm-hmm. or don't even care. You still have to go through and make make those signs on the wall in order to say, you know, I'm a part of this team. I'm a part of the club. I'm a good American. And so we can see that these different professional organizations are being captured or have been captured. And we can see that there are dissidents that pop out or whistleblowers that come and they stand up. But it's really showing that society, our American society, is really more and more homogenous, more and more in lockstep with the regimes, or with this one blanket moral code of diversity, yeah. equity, and inclusion, or equality and fairness. And mm-hmm. that people are sacrificing, maybe they're sacrificing their freedom, maybe they're not sacrificing their freedom. But if that's the state, I think it would be really instructive. And I think that's why your work, your voice, and your book are so important and valuable right now. because they can give us an opportunity to see what it's like to have freedom not available. Something that we might take for granted is something that you find very valuable and something that you want to preserve and you want to fight for. And you're putting yourself, you're throwing yourself into the fight for this. So what was it like to realize, what is this? Could you just map that journey? If it's not a stale journey, you've already talked about it 1,000 times, but realizing like that you can think for yourself, you can speak from your own conscience rather than according to a collective conscience.
I think there's something else. And I hope we're not going to go for philosophical. And I'm not going to be ready to. But also, I think this value system that you have to adopt, the freedom is part of that value system, where it's from. It's rooted in Christianity. And so why we can, you know, why there's no moral compass grew up in China, because it's rooted in it's all religion is all wiped out. So it's really rooted in communism. Communism has no moral foundation. It's all depend on the power. So they right or wrong all determined by those in power, and so we were told to do this and that, and then it's obviously wrong. But if the party said that is right, you just do it, because we have no our moral foundation, which is, you know, in Chinese society it's Confucian that's been destroyed, and so here's the same thing. So why, you know, the HR they hijacked the moral guidance for the profession is because they destroyed Christianity. Really, you know, what is equality? Equality, you know, is equal in God's eye. And then we practice it as the equal opportunity. They twisted and then substituted with equity, which is Marxism, which is, you know, the result of...
which is equalization, not equality.
Yeah. So, but once you lose that moral foundation, which is Christianity, which has been under attack for decades, and you lose the way to judge, and then you say, okay, equity sounds good, and then but if you understand what equality is and where it's from, and then you can judge it. You can say, no, it's not right. This country is not built so that everyone has the same stuff. Or the same result, the same car, same everything. No, it's we are all equal in God's eye, and you can be a million billionaire, and you are not any more valuable in God's eye than I, who have just ordinary, right?
Yeah.
That's the foundation of this country, and that's why it made it so great.
Is part of your journey of assimilation? Finding of a deeper moral foundation, a deeper
religious
truth. I think so.
I'm not a Christian.
Okay.
But I am. I guess I can call myself a cultural Christian, and okay. I talk to a lot of people who growing up Christian, and I don't know. I don't know your faith. I don't know whether you are a Christian or not. But I know a lot of Americans who grew up Christian because they just go to church and then they later they say they're not Christian. But I ask them, when you say what's right, what's wrong, and they're conservative, where are you the value system from? It's from Christianity. It's the same as our founding fathers. A lot of them did not claim themselves Christian, but their moral foundation is rooted in Christianity.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
In your journey, just on your personal level, escaping that the communist or the Maoist moral value, which is always dictated by some sort of government, either individual or agency, whoever's in power, mm-hmm. coming to America or escaping that or fleeing or leaving that system. How did you find what was the journey of you finding a transcendent moral framework, something that was greater than what you were told to think? Like, where did you start to grow as a person into finding your moral compass?
I if we go there, it will be difficult. I did describe it a little bit in my book, and I think it's a really long process. Last time you did, I did talk to you about detox of my mind. And so there's a lot of things that were just there, and I did not even realize it was wrong until it was challenged. And so it was the process. And of course, I do credit to my husband. He's American, and just through kind of a everyday interaction, and sometimes issues come up, and I have to argue with him. And then I feel like, quite a few times, but I don't remember the detail. And I can't argue back. And because my value system was not challenged, if I don't discuss with other people.
Yeah. The act of being, or the practice of engaging in argument and discussion, being challenged, yeah, that opened your mind, that allowed you to see parts of your assumptions that hadn't been thought through.
Yeah. Okay. That is, I have coworkers, and we will talk, and then we talk so much that we eventually make it like a lunchtime, like a debate time. In the past, I quit my job 2 years ago, but for like years, and that's just, I just love it. And so I think assimilation, we can't, if you're young, you come here, with your parents, you go to public school. In old days, public school teaches, it's just little things here and there, and then eventually you're absorbed into the culture, and that culture is American culture. And so you become American in that way, but being an adult and being first generation, and you have to actually almost take the initiative yourself. No one is coming over and assimilate you. You have to want to be assimilated. I want to become American.
And why, so then? Why? What is it important to become American?
Yeah, because I know I'm free, and that's why I describe my journey to America and how hard it was to get my visa. And once I leave the country, I leave China, the moment I will never forget, and that is like leaving a prison. So I know I'm free, but even I'm free, what freedom means, and why we have freedom, and that is the process of assimilation. I want to be American, but I did not know how. I don't know what it means to be American.
Yeah. So what you're pointing to is that freedom of speech is really important in order to have freedom of thought. You have to be able to discuss ideas to turn them around. So any system that enforces a rigid belief system, or you have to think this way or you can't think that way, is already not American.
Yes. Yes. And also in China, you don't want to engage with people in deep discussion because throughout the communist rule, they absolutely made this something very dangerous to exchange ideas with your fellow countrymen, because they're supposedly, if you say something wrong, you're afraid that they will report you. And that happened, especially in the Cultural Revolution, that everyone turned against each other because we were all asked to really catch all the counter-revolutionaries. That means someone said something that is not in line with what party said is right, or someone expressed any doubt, or someone just said something that's so innocent but can be interpreted as counter-revolutionary. You report them and you see what happened to them. They are either sent to the labor reform camp or gulags, or some get executed. So everyone regard everyone else as potential snitchers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And especially even your spouse. And there were so many stories of spouse turning each other in. And so parents, you know, like my parents, I never discussed politics with them. Never, ever. And because they would not do that. And they knew the danger of doing it. And the children would turn against their parents.
So the power of this authoritarian state disrupted the connection between individuals.
Yeah.
And the connection between individuals, if it's to be, let's say, authentic in the real sense, not in the current sense, it should, in order for it to be authentic, it needs to be open and free. You need to be able to express your thoughts. You need to be able to be wrong or rude.
Yeah.
Or not communist or not woke or not progressive or not a part of the regime. You need to be able to do that in order for that real exchange, not just of ideas, but of your humanity, to share your family, to know each other.
Mm-hmm. And so in China, there is a very common expression, so-and-so made mistake. It is the equivalent of so-and-so committed crime. Making mistake in the CCP's terminology is committed a political crime.
Okay.
So you are so afraid of making mistakes. And how do you do that? You shut up.
Yeah.
You don't say anything. If you say something, you make sure that is the right thing to say. So in China, in CCP's China, not China itself, but in CCP's China, in communist countries, people tell lies because they know that that's how they keep themselves safe.
It's safer to tell lies, but you don't know when that lie is going to be a mistake, right?
Yes.
You go along with the party line, but it might change.
It might change just overnight. So even if you praise the party, the wrong time, it can't be a crime. It can't be a mistake.
Yeah.
So that is the real harm. You know, people say, you know, communism, you know, it's all about abolition of a private property, you know, they want to get your stuff and whatever. It's an economic system. I think the worst thing about communism is the abolition of private ownership of your thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your first and foremost property is your conscience, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And you're outsourcing that. That's what's being taken from you.
Yeah.
Which is more damaging to the
it's
human
more damaging
than just having to share, you know, some a different economic system where everybody's kind of roughly kept equal.
Yeah,
through a
I think it's absolutely more. It's the evilest system ever created, and I tweeted that I think the day before or yesterday. There was a discussion on X about the difference between fascism and communism. So I tweeted that the difference is, or main difference is that the government or the state says 2 + 2 = 5. In the fascist country, you just have to agree. You have no choice. It's okay. But in a communist country, you have to believe it. You have to believe it. And they have all sorts of ways for you to eventually absolutely believe it.
Okay.
And that's called thought reform, that every person, no matter you are the enemy of the state or you are the Communist Party or you are the Communist Party leader, we have to go through that process. And it is a process of a lifetime. You never get it down because you always, always watch what you think. Make sure it is absolutely in line with the party, and you have to believe it.
Yeah. There. I just want to bring up something from Twitter / X that I saw yesterday, where there's this very rather successful YouTuber called Philosophy Tube or Abigail Thorne. They transitioned a few years ago from male to a trans woman. And they wrote on the first day of this year, which is the day before yesterday. I'm on kind of vacation, so I don't know what day it is. But they said, let's make 2024 the year transphobia has consequences. I think we've been patient enough. So whether it's in politics, journalism, entertainment, or anything else, let's make transphobia a career-ending move. Now, it was really interesting about that tweet that they think that politics, journalism, and entertainment are the most important things because it is about how we think. And we need to control people. It's whether or not the whole issue of gender or transition, that's one whole discussion, but that somebody is going to say, you can no longer question this. You can no longer believe your eyes or your ears. Mm-hmm. You have to believe what we tell you to believe through politics, journalism, education, and all that. I made fun of it on Twitter. I said it's lipstick communism because it's not just about enforcing, but it's enforcing something that is internal to you.
Yeah. And actually, someone commented on my tweet and then just changed it. They said, the state says trans woman is a woman. And in the fascist state, you say, okay, I said, in a communist state, you have to believe it. You absolutely have to believe it. If you don't, something is wrong with you. You have to take that thought reform process to really find out why you don't believe it. You got to believe it eventually, like 1984, right? And eventually you believe it.
So from my point of view, I think that you call it evil. I think it's not stable and it's not real and it's enforcing falseness, which basically is evil, but that term evil is a little, it's got a lot of storytelling power to it. So I want to treat it lightly, but from my point of view, it's just not stable. Like you can't actually make this thing keep on working, but in China, it's been able to run. So we can't just say in America, we can say, oh, they'll grow out of it. Like this is going to fall apart. Of course, a man can't be a woman. A woman can't be a man, just for example. But if you look at China, once this system of thought control took root, it's been able to perpetuate. Power somehow has been able to stabilize. Why would it not be able to do that in America? Like, how is it stable if it's not connected to the truth?
It's not stable. It's not. Because that is the story of the Great Leap Forward. I think more and more Americans have heard about it. And it took place in the late 1950s. And Mao came up with this grand plan. Okay, this five-year plan.
The plan is that... The Green Nude Eel. Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, Chinese... Every one of them will be mobilized to do one thing, to make steel, so that we can pass the steel production and of UK and America and in a few years. And why not? We have this, we have a back thing, it's like a 600 million. Yeah, we mobilize everybody, even the kids, even the peasants, even the cadres and whatever, to do one thing, to make steel. Everyone knew it was kind of crazy, but everyone went along, and because it's the party order. So even within the party, many people later, they revealed, they knew it was kind of crazy. So they have backyard furnaces set up everywhere in the countryside, in town, and then everyone was engaged in steel production. And by what? By burning wood, by getting everything metal in your whole household and then just throw it in and burn into useless junk. Hmm. And then what's the result? The result was the Great Famine that starved to death up to 50 million Chinese.
So they all
end up like a total disaster.
Yes, but Mao still somehow maintains power. The party somehow survives. Even through like this huge mistake. Somehow the party's stable enough.
Yeah. because they had the power. They were able to survive with that kind of a so-called mistake. And then later they just say it's a mistake. Yeah, their mistake together.
So when they make a mistake, you have to forgive them. But if you make a mistake to the camp.
And just like here, same thing. The government can make, and they have a policy. Oh, the policy did not work out. So tough. If you are the victim of their policy, well, sorry. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah. But if you're in the wrong protest, protesting the wrong thing, you'll be in prison. But if you're in the protest, protesting the right thing, how much damage you do, we'll bail you out.
That's the reason I wrote that book. I did not write that book just to say what happened in China, 50 years ago, while I was there, whatever. No. And I think that is the problem with a lot of, it's not the problem. That is fact that many people read about what happened in the history books of what happened in the communist country. And then they were horrified and all that. And they think it's unfortunate. It happened over there, right? Over there in another time. And then you put the book aside and you forget it. But it is here. And that's why I wrote that book, to call out the parallels. Everything that we said and that I talked about happening in China is happening here, even though it is not an exact repeat. And that's another mistake a lot of people are making. That when we say history repeating, I said, what are you talking about? There's no Mao in China. Where is the dictator Mao? It's Trump. They can't find one. So that's they look for certain things and then try to match it exactly in order to call it history repeating. So Mark Twain said it the best. It doesn't repeat. It rhymes.
Yeah. And so what is the model of resisting the authoritarian Maoist tendency of our regime? From your point of view, what are the key daily practices or exercises for the most amount of individuals to enact that will forestall or change the direction of what you see as a Maoist America?
Yeah, I would say that in China, people say, how could Chinese put up with all that BS? They have no power. They have no power. By the time they realize all this was absolutely a scam, it was too late. Their guns were confiscated. They're disarmed. They absolutely have no power to resist. Even though there's a lot of, now I'm still learning the history. There are a lot of recorded uprisings, small scale uprisings here. There are a lot of them, but really it did not do much to overthrow the system. I'm talking about the past 75 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so in China, that is where we're going. We still have the chance to fight back. And that's why we have to seize the moment. We have to resist. Yes, it is difficult. It is dangerous to speak up. You may lose your job. You may lose your reputation. You may lose your status as an influencer or whatever. You may be canceled.
Yeah.
But if we don't do it now, it's all gone. By the time you really want, especially those who are on the other side, thinking they are the winners. No one will be the winners except those in power. Even those who end up getting the power and become the ruler, they are not safe either. They're going to fight because their power was getting, they got their power illegitimately. And they're going to continue to fight, which played out in every communist country. The infight within the power structure is never over. It's always the purge is just never stop.
Yeah.
So now, yes, it is risky. And but I tell people, okay, if you think nowadays it's kind of a, I don't want people to think that I do this and that, or I think this way, that way. Okay. And you don't want to go to school board to speak for your kids because you might lose your job, which happened. It happened that certain parents that I know, and then they were reported. Someone reported to their employer and said they're racist. And some of them lost their jobs. But if we don't do it now, if later you want to speak up for your children, you'll go to jail or you'll go to execution site. And then that is the absolute where we're going. So people have to understand it.
Yeah,
I was there. I witnessed it.
Yeah. So if you look at, it's marvelous, this system, this communist system, whatever this is, this ideology, it's marvelous that it can still perpetuate within halls of power. It can still somehow in China keep on going and going, even though it's really unstable. There's all this infighting because like their highest, I guess what they worship or their god in a metaphorical sense is power itself, is power, is worshiping that which can correct things, the experts, the system, the power, and whoever is, and so everybody's seeking that. It destabilizes it, the system, on all these different ways. So we need a better value system, a better transcendent ideal, whatever that would be. I guess you're saying freedom is a part of that ideal. So, but you have to exercise freedom, but also there needs to be like some sort of positive value other than just power. People who seek power are always going to be there. People are always going to be ambitious and seeking power. So I guess communism runs on that ambition for power, and that's why it can keep on refreshing itself, even though it keeps on cutting off people's heads and tongues, because it's hijacking people's desire for power. I'm trying to formulate a question, but I'm also like just, I'm speaking out loud to try to think through. The resistance isn't just speaking out. It's also living a value system or trying to put people with certain values in charge, right?
Yes, and I think that's kind of a, I don't know what your question is, but I think I know what you're talking about. And I think that it is not just speaking out, exactly, but it is important to understand what you are supporting or what you are not. And so many people believing in the woke and the easiest way we can call it woke ideologies. Why? Because it sounds so good. Absolutely sounds so wonderful. And that is the thing that a lot of people don't understand of communism. Communism is so evil, yet it come out with the slogans and then the narrative is so good. And I actually, the more I give it, the more I give thought to it, the more I realize because communism was built as a mirror image of Christianity. It's the opposite, but it's very, very similar.
Huh.
Equality, equity. Okay, to love the sinner, but not the sin, now is to love the sin, right? So all the things that they talk about is very, very familiar for people. It's not something strange, and it sounds so good. And also, communism is not absolute lie. It is lie sprinkled with truth. Mm-hmm. They never really just totally like an absolute 100% lie. Mm-hmm. There's always some kind of a truth in it. So it sounds just really good. And that's why it's so deceptive. And that's why so many people fall for it. So I think to speak up is you have to even understand it. And you know it is kind of wrong, but you have to understand how to argue back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of the problem we have, and a lot of people don't have the language.
Mm-hmm.
And also language is so corrupted, right? The language has been absolutely weaponized and corrupted. We don't have even the conservatives don't have the language, the narrative to fight back.
Yeah. Well, that would be the natural question that I'm thinking of is that what is, and it was where we began, like, what is that American, as somebody who assimilated into America, describe America to an American who just, it was the water. I'm watching it kind of flee from me, but it was all these assumptions that I made, like you coming into it. What is it that I should be fighting for? What is it that you're fighting for? What is that? What is the message, the content, the story?
For me, I know they're a lie because I was there. And so what I want to tell people is that these are lies and this will be the result. And we start to see some result, but it will take us a while to get to where I came from. But the problem is if we wait until everyone sees the result that I'm warning them about, it will be too late. It will be too late. So they're saying, you know, the equity. Do you know what equity looks like? So I try to tell them, I was there. And the equity looks like that we all brought down to the lowest level and we all lose everything. Not just the wealth, because communism cannot create wealth. After they redistributed everything, and then it's all gone. So we all share the equity of misery, of poverty, and of oppression. And that's why I try to tell them the story, what happened, what will happen. And the stories are everywhere, not just China, you know, Cuba, yeah. You know, Soviet Union. And that's kind of hard to get to. They don't understand what's the next step. So I really want more and more people who lived through communism to really share their story. We were there, the next step, we were there. And that's exactly where we're going. I don't know whether I answered your question.
No, it's a very good point. Today, last night, it's really interesting because once you start to understand the pattern of what you're describing and you call Mao's America, you can see it as a way to understand why the regime or this collection of media, entertainment, education, and politics are all kind of working the same way, or working in lockstep, because they are all kind of subscribing to the same ideology, this kind of this centralized communist-ish, American communist, American Maoist ideology. So last night or early this morning, the Associated Press released an article about the resignation of Harvard's president, Claudine Gay, and said that the latest weapon of conservatives is plagiarism.
I know. I saw that.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
So yeah. what the regime is doing is they are giving every value, like standards. Mm-hmm. That's a right-wing dog whistle. Telling the truth, being honest, owning your own work, having your own ideas. All those things are right wing. They're not a part of the regime. The regime doesn't believe in plagiarism. It believes in power. It believes in this person is a protected person, and we will use her race when it's appropriate. When it's not appropriate, we won't use her race. We will cede any value. There's no consistency in value other than keeping the regime in lockstep. So for some reason, we'll never know, Claudine Gay was really instrumental to the regime. And so the regime's having this reaction that's exposing itself as not having standards. Yeah. Or all of its standards are in lockstep with this equity goal or whatever it is.
Yeah. And when I saw that, it was amazing that they really exposed themselves. But also, resignation of Gay is not about her, right? It's about how the regime was exposed, and that's why they're so upset. And that's the thing that when you get there. You know, what you thought was right become wrong. What you thought was wrong become right. It's all depend on whether it is useful for the regime.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about earlier. So you think you repeat the lie, and then overnight, the lie become the wrong thing to repeat. So anyway.
Yeah.
And so, that was a great Wait,
It's easy. Oh, there's this internet term called being blackpilled, where you're just hopeless, like the whole thing's lost. How do you, and I think that in the core of your message, I sense like this optimism. There's this almost like a part of America to you is optimism. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I don't see the values that you're championing working without an optimistic, positive demeanor, positive stance. Even if it's rebellious and reactive to certain things, it's a positive assertion of some positive value. How have you kept from being overwhelmed with despair or hopelessness because things are going so far and they have gone so far? What keeps you plucky?
Yeah, that is a great question because people ask me about that a lot. I think the answer is I know what is coming if we don't fight back. And I told everyone, I'm not courageous. I'm not someone with such courage. I just don't want to live under communism again. I don't want to fight with all my might to stop it. That's it. So if people really understand what's really coming up, everyone, including the left, they will resist. They will join the fight. But people don't know. That's what I'm trying to do, to wake them up. It's not acceptable for me to live through communism and in my first 26 years and made my way to freedom and to lose it. And this time, there's nowhere else for me to go. And there's no place for all Americans to go. This is it. So I don't have the luxury to think, oh, maybe I give it up. Maybe I can win. I have to fight. I have to fight until I'm the last one left. I will be there fighting because I know what's coming and what it is like to live under a totalitarianism.
And the alternative, what does the alternative look like? I don't see us dismantling the federal government. I don't see us dismantling Harvard. They have infinite resources. Do you think it's possible to change their values or to pressure them to realign themselves to the values of freedom? This apparatus, it's kind of an abstract question, but how do we put pressure on the state that's going in this direction, that's already going in this direction?
Yeah, I know how to do exact how to do is a very big question. And I think the first thing we need to do is take back our school. We should stop the indoctrination of even more future generations. We already lost so many of them. And I really, really appreciate what Christopher Ruffo has been doing. He single-handedly take down Accordion Gay. And so that's what we have to focus because it's not about her. It's about the regime. And we have to do one at a time. Focus on it. Absolutely. What was picket and freeze it. And what's the I just tweeted today the Alinsky's rule for the radical and personalize it and polarize it and take down one symbol at a time, and that's how we get rid of fight back and get rid of DEI.
Do you think that the regime will adapt to that, or like if you cut like okay, so there's a metaphor in my culture where every time you cut off a head, another head just springs forth, or two heads spring forth. So if we keep on, do you think that cutting off the heads will eventually teach the body to go in a different direction? Right?
No, I think really the first thing, the most important thing is to get back to school.
Is
Take it
education.
back to school.
Okay, yeah.
So we no longer have the indoctrination of the children. And that's the first thing. And those who are already really become committed to the cause, I don't know how to change their mind, but we have to take it in the institutional level. At least we should ban DEI. All the DEI officers, we should, at least that's what I have been calling them. They're commissars. They're absolutely party branches, the equivalent of CCP's party branches in every institution. That's what they are. And we have to expose them to make DEI such a toxic word, toxic term, that people realize those people, when you say you work for DEI, when you say you're HR and you're implementing DEI, people will associate it with communists and with, you know, the absolutely the commissar, absolutely put that in their mind. And then we have to get that out of the structure, and then but to get rid of the ideology, that will be a long term fight, because it took them how many decades? It took them more than really 100 years to start in the 30s. It's about 100 years and to get where we're today. So that will take a long time for us to get rid of them, and we will never get rid of them. And communism will never disappear. As long as we have people who dream of a utopia where they don't have to work, they just get your neighbor's stuff, right? You get handout from the government, there will be communism. As long as there are people who think they are God and they can tell the rest of the society how to live their life, they will be the one to organize society. Communism will be there. So that is something we have to, it is like a COVID. It become a common code. Going nowhere, it will be with us. We just have to always, always be aware and fight back. There's no Jesus solution. We are here today. My God, I can't believe coming here in America. Now everyone, most of the people think like a communist. It's just amazing. They absolutely just, of course, equity. Of course, we don't want racism. No one wants racism, but they don't realize that is a weapon that the left use to control us.
Well, I think the racism, or let's say transphobia, is another hot term. Those are moral, interpersonal, relational values. To end somebody thinking the wrong way is to give the state or somebody else the power to change somebody's thinking. It's not just hubristic, but it's not just the hubris that you think you could end racism or end discrimination. That's hubris in itself, but it's also laying the groundwork for a totalitarian regime whose job is to interfere with people's conscience. People should have freedom of association, freedom of thought, that you can think whatever you want. I disagree with you, and here's why, and I think that the way that you think is not, it's not conducive to a healthy life, and we can talk about that. But to say, well, I need to change how you think, and I'm going to use the power of the state to change how you think, that's where it flips over, and that's where the loss of humility and trust in other people's ability to come to the conclusion or go through the developmental process of evolving in their thinking or it fails.
Thought control. If you ask me to summarize communism, it is a power and it's a control, not just your body, but your mind. Yeah. Mind. They want to control our mind.
Yeah. So what are some of the benefits that you've received since embarking on this this career as an influencer, a patriotic influencer? What are some of the fun things that are interactions or connections?
My
connections?
God, yeah. I have no idea. When I went to the school board, and I thought I just did something, you know, as a citizen, you know, that's my duty to go there and voice my concern about where the schools, you know, school board was doing to our schools. And since then, you know, I have been invited and going to places, meet people, and it's just amazing. It was an amazing journal. I meet you. I used to watch you a lot, and now I'm talking to you. So, and I'll, of course, by going and to places and talk to people and make them realize that this is absolutely history repeating. And I have so many people told me, either online or in person, that they have no idea about Cultural Revolution. And now they know it, and then they realize they see it. Yeah.
And what have you, I guess this is a kind of a part of your assimilation journey, because you came through and you went through, and with your husband, you talked through, you went through the process of learning about your assumptions and engaging with the freedom of thought, freedom of speech. And then you acted from your conscience at that school board meeting. And now you're being shuffled around America. What are you seeing? I'm sure that you're now like meeting Americans across all these different socioeconomic levels, classes, races, all that stuff. Like, what are you learning about America, and how can you show us, reflect America back to us? Like, what do you see going to all these meetings and having all these interactions with all these people? What are you seeing about us?
Yeah, I did notice something, especially with young people. And most of the places that go, some kind of a Republican organization, most of them just, you know, older people, like gray. That's the color you see. It's a, you know, like my age. And but I, from time, because their education and was not tainted with Marxism. So, and sometimes I will see young people, I see more and more young people, which is very encouraging. I always talk to them and please tell me, how come that you survived the indoctrination from public school and from university? And two things. And they always tell me, and there's no exception, church and family. Okay. But that is exactly what the left are trying to destroy. And that's, I had two chapters talking about family and talking about faith. And so if we want to build back, as you said, how do we do it? You know, cut the head off. What I say, two things. To build back America, we have to build back the church. We have to build back the family. And so church, you know, nowadays, church are so divided. There is some of woke, they're everywhere, right? You can go and see in this urban area, you can see church with a BMM flag, with a pro-Palestinian or rainbow or trans, you know, those are woke churches, right? And there are some other churches, they say, we don't want to get involved in politics. We just don't want to touch it. So we just pretend nothing was happening outside the wall of the church. Hmm. And then only a few, I think Charlie Kirk said, probably 15% of the church are actively engaging, fighting against the woke ideologies. Yeah. So if we lose all the churches, yeah, it's over. It's absolutely over. And the other is family. And I would think family is also has directly built on the faith. You know, so many families are broken up. I'm telling you, just like the Cultural Revolution, and that this is very personal as well. We see so many families now fighting with each other, right? Because of the politics. And right now, especially with transgender ideology, they actively tell the children to cut their ties with parents. The state already step in, just like China. They become the parents. So they have to destroy this too, because they spend so much time and they have made such success in destroying this too. That's where we are today. To build this America back, we have to build this too bad. We have to build back the church. We have to build back the families.
You know, so that's a that's a political hot topic because there's this boogeyman or this specter of fascism that that people call Christian nationalism, right? Yeah. And like, what if the state imposed Christian values, you know? Yeah. And so it's kind of a scary thing. Like, and part of our it's a contradiction because part of America's founding is the freedom of conscience to choose your own mode of faith. So I don't know how that is. None of the solutions to this is top down. All of it is bottom up. And one of the ways that I see thinking of it now that faith can become again a part of the fabric of our nation is through and family. They both rely on a sense of duty and humility that my life is made valuable in service to others. And so I take on the burden of being a family guy or a family man, and I chain myself to a wife and children, and I humble my own, I sacrifice my own pursuit of happiness for something, for a greater cause. And through my sacrifice, I gain connection, ownership, meaning, stability, and then I start to realize that my actions, my contributions to society, in order for society to be mine, I need to serve society. I need to be a part of that. I need to be engaged. And so faith, I think, will come out of that and also help people to navigate that because it is a great sacrifice of our personal freedom, ironically, to have a family. It's a great sacrifice of our momentary pleasures to have a child and to give of myself to other people. And so faith helps us with that. And then also that gives us faith in a way that changes that. Yeah. It remolds us into the values. So in order for this to actually work out, and I think this is kind of the call to action or a challenge to America, if Americans want America to remain America, they have to make a choice between momentary pleasure and the greater good. And they have to make a choice between an ideology that puts themselves at the center of the universe or an ideology that says you're a part of the universe and your job is to serve the universe, right? And that's kind of, you can say that that's a Christian value set, but that's also, it's in many different religions. It's not just a Christian value.
That agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying about Christianity is that we're going to save America, right? All this conversation we have is how to save America and what is America? Why I want to come to America? Why did I want to go to somewhere in another country, which is not communist? There are many which are not really communist. Why do I want to come to America? I want to come to America because of the freedom. But where did the freedom come from? And that is what make America America. And I think that is the, I did describe it and talk about it in my book. And that's my understanding, that America is not a Christian country as a theocracy. America is built on the Christian principles. Those are the things I'm talking about preserving. When those are gone, all freedom is gone, because that is uniquely Christianity. You cannot find that we are all created by our creator, and our rights of not from the government, but from our own creator. And that's something so alien to the rest of the world, to China, definitely. It's always from the ruler. It can be an emperor, it can be the CCP. And that people never even think about that our rights are from our creator. That is uniquely Christian. And that's how we built this country. That's how that America attracted people from all over the world with all sorts of faiths can be here and keep their faith and be prosperous. It's because of this. And so that's why I'm talking about Christian nationalism. I believe there's so much talk about it. I believe it's part of the globalist tactic to create it's a trap. You know, are you a Christian? Do you love your country? They put it together and name it like a ultra right totalitarianism. Yeah. But if you read and listen to them, they do say that they want to make America a Christian country, meaning a theocracy. And that's the danger. And but that is also that's the gift of the right, of the left. They weaponize words.
Yeah.
They weaponize language.
Yeah.
Right? They present it in such a way now, no one can say, oh, many people on the right deny they are Christian nationalism, which is right. But at the same time, you deny Christianity and you deny patriotism.
Yeah.
So we're in a very, very, the situation is very muddy. It's never clear that we have a clear enemy we're fighting. They lay traps everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's communists. They're so good about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether I describe it, how I feel.
No, you're absolutely right. That's why they can come out with the articles about plagiarism being a far right dog whistle. If you're talking about plagiarism, it's like, okay. But it's also...
They're desperate.
They're desperate, but they're also being honest, because they just copy and paste. All they do is copy, like they're a bunch of monkeys. Like, they don't have freedom of thought anymore. They all just regurgitate the same ideas over and over and over again, and do the same, like, whoever the party says, we're going to start using this language. We're going to capitalize the word black, but not white. And everybody just has to do it. You know, the Associated Press is perfect, because they give these style guidelines, which are just like, they're just the regime telling you how to think, what to say. So being aware of it. And I wanted to pressure you a little bit. So you believe in these Christian values, but you say you're not a Christian yourself.
No.
So you can have these values, you can agree with these values, you can resonate these values, but your faith itself is something different. You still have freedom of, or you're not a Christian, but you want Christianity. There's a tension there.
I know. I think that's what I said earlier. I think I'm a cultural Christian.
Yeah.
So I absolutely accept and believe in those values. But to be a Christian, there is a leap of faith, and I'm not there yet. But I totally understand the difference between America is a Christian country, and the difference between call America a Christian country or a country built on the Christian principles. Okay. And I believe that's the latter. Yeah. And because of it, you can really, anyone, you can believe in whatever, and you can survive, not survive, you can thrive in America. That does not happen in any other country, only in Christian countries, especially in America. So that is because this is not a Christian country, but a country built on Christian principles.
What's coming up next for you? What are you looking forward to this year? What's on your docket?
Yeah, you know, the reason I wrote a book is because I can't really tell the whole story by going and, you know, to a speech in the 40 minutes there, and then 30 minutes there, and 5 minutes here. There were. So I decided I have to write a book. I have to. There's no choice. And to tell the story in a book, okay? And then I can tell it, of course, in more detail. But even that book, I have to tell you, even that book can't tell the whole story. There's so much to tell, and there's so little American know, and then there's so much they need to know. So actually, you know, my editor cut off 2 chapters from the book to make it... not too long. So even I lose 2 chapters, so much to say and so much to educate. the Americans. So I think my next step is I'm preparing maybe to start a podcast or something to continue to tell the story. And they're just, and you know, this is the truth. When I was in China, you have to study anywhere in a public school or in university, you have to take this class called politics. Basically, it is the CCP history, and which is nothing but lies. They're just nothing but lies. I hate it. I hate it so much that after I came here, I don't want to talk about cultural revolution. I did not even tell my own family here of my experience because it's something I'd rather forget, right? So since I started speaking up, I started to learn about the history of the CCP. And I was just shocked. I was just shocked how much I was lied to and with all the things, even though I experienced and witnessed a lot, there are so many more stories that shocked me. And I think I want to tell the Americans. And that's where we're going. That's the direction we're going. So I will continue to tell the story. And I think probably, you know, Twitter has turned out to be a great platform. And but I think probably a podcast or something like that. I will continue to tell them. Just 2 days ago, I'm telling you, just 2 days ago, actually, it's just yesterday, I found out something. I was like, what? Okay, so in the history book, or you go Google, the Chinese Communist Party was founded in 1921. Okay, everybody's supposed to know that. And that's what I was told. And in the first Congress, and Mao was among those people who present in the meeting. So he was supposed to be the founder of the CCP. Learned yesterday. Lie. The Chinese Communist Party was founded in 1920. Eight people appeared in the first Congress. Mao was not one of them. So they changed the history and then changed into the meeting when Mao appeared. That was 1921. Things like that, I did not even wonder, turned out to be a lie.
Yeah.
I don't know how big a deal it is, but to me, it was like all these years I found out yesterday.
Yeah,
by reading a book about Mao.
Yeah, it reminds me of that 1619 project, which is again a regime. It was a regime propaganda piece that they put in all the schools. So actually, America was founded on slavery. So let's tell the story of America founded on slavery. Yeah. That's where we're going to base everything on it, which is great because if you can convince everybody that America was founded on slavery, then you can just say, well, everybody's a slave of America. And then you turn everybody into slaves because it's founded on
slavery. And also, this system is evil and need to be totally dismantled. That's where the communists, they erase history, they rewrite history because they want to control you. And we're really witness this happening. We are witness people rewrite history right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. So if you did do a podcast, or if you are going to do a podcast, would it be, do you have any ideas of how it would be? Like, it sounds like you're just designing it right now. Would it be a series of interviews with people from China or historians or something?
I don't
or would you
know.
Just kind of go through and tell the story as far as you can?
I think everything I do is really help people to understand the evil of communism and to tell them the parallels. So I have done some work and I already come up with the very, 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 very short history of CCP to make it so short that, you know, people can, in a very short period of, I think probably total, I don't know, 40 minutes, they can get the clear idea how Marxism came to China, took roots, how communism grew and took power, and how it transformed China and enslaved the Chinese in a very, you know, I call it a very, very, very short history of CCP. So things like that. And then I want to really interview, yes, but interview is a skill. I don't know. Interview people is not easy, but maybe some monologue and eventually some interviews, because I do have a lot of interesting people that I know. And I don't know, but just a thought. And yeah. So far, I have been really busy on X.
Yeah, yeah, you are. You're tearing it up over there. So where can people find your books, your book, Mao's America? Anywhere?
Yeah, anywhere books are sold, you know. So I always ask people, if you go to Amazon, make sure, you know, leave a review. And also read it and share it. And especially young people. If you have young people in your circle of influence, share it and let them know about it. And of course, follow me on Twitter if you can, and or X. It's XVANFLEET. I tweet pretty much every day.
Yeah, you do. You, like I said, you tear it up. And that'll be linked in the description. Was this deep enough for you? Was this fresh? Do we go?
I think so. I think we did talk about a lot of things that are not like, you know, what I did and you know, like Cultural Revolution. But I think, yeah, we covered the process of becoming American. I think that I think we achieved that.
Facet of your story. Like I said to somebody, before an interview, the story is never always told, but the conversation always contains itself. Right? You can never tell the whole story, but every conversation has its own fullness to it. So that's what I hope we achieve.
I think so. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Z, for your time. I'm going to end the recording now. And again, links to your work are down there in the description. You're one of the most flavorful follows I have on Twitter. Thank you so much for your spirit putting it out there engaging so hard in this issue.
Thank you.
Cool. I'll cut in. I'm sorry. I'll cut in.